For the last couple of weeks, we've been kind of in a series within a series, I guess. We, for the year, have been talking about a theme that we've revisited the last couple of weeks, and the theme is learning to know our God and becoming more like Him. And that's based upon a passage, really a short verse within a longer passage that we studied for a while at the beginning of the year, the third chapter of the book of Colossians. We find this statement. It's kind of buried within a longer passage, but Paul, in writing to these people in Colossae, said, "Put on your new nature and be renewed as you learn to know your Creator and become like Him." So that's been our theme that we've been trying to address throughout the year so far. And for the last couple of weeks, we've been trying to focus on the fact that much of what God has to say to us and much of what God teaches us pertains to our relationships with one another. And so we've been trying to focus specifically on the concept of relationships and trying to create and build and strengthen new relationships and existing relationships by trying to apply that principle of learning to know our God and becoming more like Him, specifically in our relationships with one another. And so in the first of these lessons, just to review briefly, we talked about this question of what do I need to do in order to create and build relationships. And we talked about the need to have a genuine desire to be friendly to everyone, a genuine desire to not hurt anyone, a genuine desire to get to know people, and a genuine desire to help people sacrificially. So we spent a little bit of time trying to focus on that concept of creating new relationships. And then last week, in our second lesson in this series, we focused primarily on the concept of grace-based relationships, with the realization that the only reason we have a relationship with God is because of the grace that He has shown toward us, and we need to learn, as His people who have received grace, to extend grace to those around us. And so the relationships that we have with one another need to be grace-based. And we tried to dig into a little bit of what that might mean, and I think we just barely scratched the surface in that, but we dealt primarily with this question: how can I develop grace-based relationships? And two main ideas that we focused on are make people feel accepted and make people feel valuable. As we were talking about making people feel accepted, we noted what Jesus had to say in the passage that we were studying in our Bible class this morning from Luke chapter 6, a little bit further down from where we are in our class. Jesus made a comment about not judging people, similar to the one that He made in the Sermon on the Mount. And we noted last week that when we get to those statements that Jesus made about not judging, we typically skip immediately to "yes, but." We know that we have to judge, or we know that there are times when we need to judge one another, and we'll try to prove that using some other scriptures typically. And what we wind up doing quite often, I think, at least I can speak for myself, what we wind up doing is focusing so much on the "yes, but" we're supposed to judge that we just leave behind the statement that Jesus made about not judging. And so we tried to talk about that a little bit last week, about how we need to not put ourselves in the position of being the judge of people that we have relationships with. And yet we did note that there are times when we make judgments, times when we offer judgments or criticisms. And so I spent a little bit of time trying to address the question, "unless what?" And these were just my thoughts about that. Unless you already have, first of all, an established relationship with that person. Secondly, unless you are invited to offer your judgment. Third, you offer in a spirit of love and humility. And fourth, you're willing to accept similar judgments or criticisms in that relationship. So those are some exceptions, but generally we need to think about our relationships as being relationships where we don't judge and criticize. And then the second point that we made last week about making people feel valuable, I think is something that I know I need a lot of practice on. I need a lot of work on. And as I've said from the beginning of this series, I certainly don't feel like I'm an expert or have mastered the art of relationships, and certainly not I have not mastered grace-based relationships, but it's what I'm working on, and I think we all need to work on that more, and making people feel valuable. We noted at the end of our lesson last week that that's exactly what Jesus has done for us. He has made us feel accepted, and he has made us feel valuable, so much so that he was willing to give himself for us. So, continuing this morning with this general theme that we've been talking about, I'd like for us to think about having unselfish relationships. Certainly a grace-based relationship is automatically going to be somewhat unselfish, but I want us to try to maybe focus in on that thought a little bit more this morning about trying to have unselfish relationships. Because I think that's what Jesus modeled, and it's certainly what Jesus taught. There are lots of passages we could look at that illustrate Jesus teaching this idea of having unselfish relationships. Here's one. Maybe not the only passage, maybe not the passage that comes to your mind immediately, but this is one in which Jesus, I think, pretty clearly and forcefully taught that we are to have unselfish relationships. And I think it also illustrates that this isn't really natural. It's not automatic that we have unselfish relationships. As a matter of fact, the opposite is probably more automatic, that we have selfish relationships. And I think we see that in this example. Matthew chapter 20, starting verse 20. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came up to him with her sons, and kneeling before him, she asked him for something. And he said to her, "What do you want?" She said to him, "Say that these two sons of mine are to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your kingdom." We read this morning, just as a side note, we read in our class this morning from Luke's account of Jesus choosing these 12 men for a special role, a special purpose. And you know, it's hard to imagine what it would have been like to have been part of this crowd of Jesus' followers and then to be singled out by him and called to be one of the 12 in this special role, this special relationship that Jesus had with these men. Well, here is the mother of two of these men who is wanting even more for her sons. And so she says, "Please grant this, that they might sit one on your right and one on your left in your kingdom." Jesus answered, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I am to drink?" They said to him, "We are able." This is them speaking for themselves now. And he said to them, "You will drink my cup, but to sit at my right hand and at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." Then he goes on, we're told, when the 10 heard it, they were indignant at the two brothers. And that's understandable. You have these 12 men that have been chosen, and two are asking to have a special position above the rest of them. And so I think we see in all 12 of these men, probably at this point, a degree of selfishness in their relationships. And so Jesus addresses that. But Jesus called them to him and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Well, as I said, I think there are a lot of passages we could look at, but this one is one that pretty forcefully shows Jesus's idea about unselfish relationships. That he said, that's not what it's going to be like, selfish relationships. It's not going to be like that among my followers. My followers are going to be different than that. They're going to be servants. They're going to be unselfish in their relationships. So, as we think about that, the question that we're going to try to consider and hopefully begin answering at least is, how can I work toward having truly unselfish relationships? For me personally, this is probably the most difficult of the things that we've talked about so far. I struggle with selfishness in my relationships with other people, and I know this is something I've got to work on. It's much more natural, it's much more normal for me to think about what I want, what makes me happy, what my needs are, when my feelings get hurt. I mean, those kind of things tend to take prominence in my mind. And so this is something I've got to work on. I've got to try to do better at having truly unselfish, and I don't know that I'll ever get to the point where it's truly completely unselfish, but I definitely need to move more in that direction of having more unselfish relationships. So let's try to think about that question. As we think about that question, I want us to read another passage. And this is the passage that Chris read as we began this morning. We're going to go a little bit further in the text, starting again in verse 9. This is where Paul, in this letter to the Romans, starts getting real practical. He talks about a lot of what we might call theory in the first part of the book about, you know, how we're saved by God's grace. But then, as he does in many of his letters, he moves from that to, well, what does this mean? What should it look like in our lives? And so here in chapter 12, he's getting very practical, and he says, let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. And seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be conceited. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. I think what we have here is Paul, even though he doesn't use this terminology, I think he's talking about unselfish relationships and what that should look like in the life of a follower of Jesus. So I want us to try to dig into this passage a little bit and think about what he's saying. I want to make a comment real quickly on the last part of what we just read, where it's easy to misread or to misinterpret, I think, what is said here when he says, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. For by so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. It's easy to read that and think, okay, so the way to really hurt this guy is to do this, right? Heap burning coals on his head. If that's how we're reading it, we've missed the point of the passage, right? He's not saying this is how you can hurt your enemy. This is how you can exact vengeance upon him. And the last phrase, the last statement makes that abundantly clear. Do not be overcome by evil. Don't let your enemy and his evil deeds that he's done to you prompt similar feelings in you, but instead overcome evil with good. I think he's talking about your kindness, your good deeds are going to cause him to be embarrassed. And I think that's probably a way of, another way of expressing that. Anyway, let's talk about this question of how can I work toward having truly unselfish relationships? I think there are a lot of, in the two passages that we've read, I think there are several clues, several answers to this question that can help us get started on it at least. One, Jesus, as he was talking to the 12, used himself as the example, himself as the pattern, when he said, remember that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom. So, first and foremost, as far as how can I have unselfish relationships, I've got to remember who my master is. I mean, maybe the first step is for us to remember that we have a master. It's easy for us to forget that. We have a master. As Christians, we're following the master. And we've made him our Lord and our master in becoming his disciples. So remember that we have a master and remember what he's like. Remember who he is and what he did and what he modeled and what he taught. And what he showed was complete unselfish behavior. And so if we're going to follow Jesus, we have to remember what he's like and that he is unselfish and demonstrated that unselfishness in his relationships. So that's the first step, I think, toward having truly unselfish relationships. Remember how unselfish Jesus was and is. Secondly, Paul said it in the passage that we just read when he said, let love be genuine, but then he went a step further and said, think of people as your brothers and sisters. Love one another, he said, with brotherly affection. What if we could go through our lives and with every relationship that we have, what if we could think of that? Now, maybe that doesn't help if you had bad relationship with your siblings, but even if you have a bad relationship or maybe not the greatest of relationships with your siblings, you know they're still your siblings. And you know when it comes down to it, you're there for each other. And you need each other. And you've been through life together and you have so many things in common and you've shared experiences together, both good and bad. And you're bound together through that. And so what if we could approach all of our relationships that way? I've never been a fan, personally, of what I see, have heard a lot over the years, of people using brother or sister as a, almost as a religious title. And I know people that we'll say, hello, brother, and hello, sister, and that's okay, and maybe it's good, and I guess I'm just a little bit off put by that when it comes across as being a religious title, but at the same time, I think there's value in that. Now, I don't do that to my real brothers. I don't have a sister, but to my real brother, I don't say to them, hello, brother. I say, hello, Alan, or hello, David. So I don't use that with my real siblings, and so I like to talk to other people as if they're the, my siblings, but I don't always think of them that way. And I think we need to do a better job, I need to do a better job, of thinking of other people as being as close as my own brothers and sisters. If I can think of people, as Paul said, learn to love people with genuine love and with brotherly affection, I think that automatically will help me to be more unselfish in my relationships with other people. Did you notice in the middle of that passage in Romans 12 that Paul made a statement about praying and about trusting in God and putting your cares on Him? I think part of the reason that we are often selfish in our relationships is because we're not trusting God enough. And I think that's part of what has caused me to sometimes be too selfish in my relationship. If I can learn to trust God completely with my own needs, then I won't be so concerned about my needs in my relationship with other people. So if, again, think about it this way. If you know that your own needs are covered, that God's going to take care of your own needs, won't you be less focused on those when you're dealing with someone else? So trust your own needs to God, and it will help, I think, to be more unselfish in our relationships with other people. Practice empathy. That's what Paul talks about in this passage when he says to rejoice with those who rejoice and to weep with those who weep, to mourn with those who mourn. Another word for that is empathy, where we are learning to try to put ourselves in someone else's shoes, where we're trying to see through their eyes or hear through their ears or feel through their heart. We're trying to experience the things that they're experiencing. And so we don't, you know, selfishness says, I'm happy, you're not. So what? You know, I'm happy. Unselfishness says, I'm not happy because you're not happy. Or I'm happy because you're happy. That's empathy. And Paul says it's something that we need to work out. We need to practice. So it's not automatic. It's not natural. But it needs to become more automatic and more natural to those who are followers of Jesus. Give more of yourself. Also in that passage in Romans 12, Paul encouraged that. He said to contribute to the needs of the saints and to practice hospitality. So be more giving in the ways that we can. And think about the things that you have to offer to someone else, whether it's your money, whether it's your time, whether it's a kind word, whether it's some attention. We've got to learn to give more of ourselves. I've got to learn to give more of myself if I want to have truly unselfish relationships. And finally, retaliate with kindness. Retaliate with kindness. Paul said, don't exact vengeance for vengeance. Don't do bad things. Don't do evil toward those who are evil to you. Don't retaliate with evil. Retaliate instead with kindness. What if every time someone does something that hurts your feelings, something that's mean, something that's unkind to you, you respond with kindness? You think your relationships are going to be better or worse? Probably a lot better. It's not natural, it's not easy to retaliate with kindness. But we need to train ourselves in that. And that's, you know, he spent a lot of time talking about that. And it really emphasized that we've got to overcome evil with good. So retaliate with kindness. I think if we can learn to master these things, it will go a long way toward helping us build unselfish relationships. Well, I want to read some quotes. As I've said in the last 2 weeks, I've been reading an old book that I'd never read before, one that a lot of people probably have read, but for some reason I've just never read it. And it is this book entitled How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, written in 1937. It, as I said last week, it wasn't written from a Christian perspective, really. It wasn't. I mean, it's not a religious book. It's more of a business type book. But it really parallels a lot of the things that Jesus taught and things that we've been talking about as far as relationships. And I think there are some great words of wisdom that we can learn from that parallel some of the things even we've talked about this morning. Toward the end of one section of the book, one of the chapters, it's not the beginning, but it's in a section where he starts talking about some principles, Dale Carnegie said this: if you want others to like you, if you want to develop real friendships, if you want to help others at the same time as you help yourself, keep this principle in mind. And he labeled it principle number one: become genuinely interested in other people. And he had a whole chapter, that was the end of the chapter, his summary of it. He had a whole chapter about that, really, about trying to become genuinely interested in other people. And he talks about the difference between pretending that you're interested and, you know, trying to use people. That's not what he was about. He was talking about being genuinely interested and looking at how your friendships will develop as a result of that. He also quoted from this man, Alfred Adler, the famous Viennese psychologist. At least he was famous back then when Dale Carnegie wrote this book. He wrote a book entitled What Life Should Mean to You. In that book he says, it is the individual who is not interested in his fellow men who has the greatest difficulties in life and provides the greatest injury to others. It is from among such individuals that all human failures spring. From the negative, but I think it's probably a pretty accurate observation even today. And when we think about it that way, I think we need to learn to teach our children better at being genuinely interested in our fellow men and not as self-centered as we seem to be becoming more and more that way in our generations. So, but all of us, and I'm speaking for myself as well, need to work on that. And then he also said, he quoted Henry Ford, who obviously, you know, there's still a huge company with his name. He founded that company and was one of the most successful businessmen ever. And he said this: here is one of the best bits of advice ever given about the fine art of human relationships. If there is any one secret of success, said Henry Ford, it lies in the ability to get the other person's point of view and see things from that person's angle as well as from your own. Now, he's speaking from a business perspective, but he's talking about empathy. And as a leader of a business, he recognized the importance and placed it at the very top of his list of how important it is in your relationships with your employees to learn to see through their eyes, to have their perspective, and to empathize with other people. So I think that's great advice that I know I need to work on more. And finally, he tells a story in one of these chapters. Can't remember exactly which chapter, but he tells a story about Theodore Roosevelt. And Theodore Roosevelt was president about 30-something years before this book was written. And he was succeeded by Taft. And so he tells a story, he first tells a story about Roosevelt and some of his employees who were groundskeepers and some of the kind things that he had done for them over the years. And so after talking about that, he says, how could employees keep from liking a man like that? How could anyone keep from liking him? Roosevelt called at the White House one day when the president and Mrs. Taft were away. So this is after he's no longer president and Taft has become president after him. So he goes to visit the White House and they're not there. His honest liking for humble people was shown by the fact that he greeted all the old White House servants by name, even the scullery maids. When he saw Alice, the kitchen maid, writes Archie Butt, he asked her if she still made cornbread. Alice told him that she sometimes made it for the servants, but no one ate it upstairs. They show bad taste, Roosevelt boomed, and I'll tell the president so when I see him. Alice brought a piece to him on a plate, and he went over to the office eating it as he went and greeting gardeners and laborers as he passed. He addressed each person just as he had addressed them in the past. Ike Hoover, who had been head usher at the White House for 40 years, said with tears in his eyes, "It is the only happy day we had in nearly 2 years, and not one of us would exchange it for a $100 bill." So that was the impact that Theodore Roosevelt was able to have on people because he took an interest in them, because he was unselfish in his relationships with those around him. I think it's a good example. There's some great stories in that book about people who learned to be less selfish in their relationships with other people and learned to focus more on the interests of others and how that worked out for them in their lives. I want to close with one final passage, and it's a passage that you're probably familiar with, hopefully. In our Wednesday night class, we have started looking, this past Wednesday night, we started looking at a passage in Philippians chapter 4, which we noted is the most highlighted passage in the Bible on Amazon or somewhere, I think the Kindle app. But this is from the same book of Philippians, but a little bit earlier, and it's one that I think is almost as well known. Starting in verse 1 of Philippians chapter 2, Paul talked about unselfish relationships. He said, "Is there any encouragement from belonging to Christ? Any comfort from his love? Any fellowship together in the Spirit? Are your hearts tender and compassionate? Then make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other, loving one another, and working together with one mind and purpose. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him, elevated him to the place of highest honor and gave him the name above all other names, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father." Paul used Jesus as the ultimate example of unselfishness in relationships. He gave himself completely, died a criminal's death on the cross because he valued us so much and took such an interest in our well-being. So that's the model that we as disciples of Jesus try to follow. Hopefully we can do better at that. Hopefully I can do better at that in being more unselfish in my relationships with other people. Mickey's going to lead us in a song to encourage us to think about God and the wonderful promises that he has made to us because he loves us so much. If there's some way that we can help you this morning in making a change in your life or coming to God for the first time, let us know as together we stand and sing.